Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, KEYS. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.
There's the challenge of opening yourself up to what else is out there. And to do so, you need to step beyond the way you see things so you can let something new in, which is a totally scary process. And then you have to then continue to work in this place where you're uncomfortable in order to be able to ultimately create something new and go through that process of iteration and refinement and discovery until it is actually something. I mean, when you first step out into the unknown, you're an infant. You know, you're really out of your element. You know, you have whatever skills you've cultivated to work with that environment, but you're in a new world. So there's always a stepping out into the unknown. I see this in the microcosm of Muse. As we work with a team to build new things, we are doing things that no one has ever done before. And to do so really is asking everyone to step out of their comfort zone and to try to see things with fresh new eyes so that we can, you know, actually be able to, you know, receive what we need to actually know what to do, as opposed to, you know, just doing what you know in a new place and having it fail because you're not listening.
I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where you get a window into the stories and insights of the most innovative and creative minds who've started movements, built thriving businesses, written best-selling books, and created insanely interesting art. For more, check out our 500-episode archive at unmistakablecreative.com. Chris, welcome to the Unmistakable Creative. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Hey, great to be here with you, and excited to explore whatever we explore together.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know about your story because the company you started, Muse, happened to be one of the sponsors of our podcast, and we even gave away one of your headsets to our listeners, which was super cool. But before we get into all the things that you have done with Muse, I want to start by asking you, where did you grow up, and what impact did where you grew up end up having on the choices that you've made throughout your life and your career?
Wow, that's a deep question. So I am from Toronto. And I still reside here. And I'd say the thing that impacted me the most, would be the ability to explore different kinds of, practices, whether it be, you know, through sports, or academically. But there was just something about the way I was raised, and I think that that our culture really lends itself to this, is having some freedom to explore and find things that really speak to you. And so certainly being able to have a number of different experiences early in life really gives you a broader canvas, and also to be, let's say, accepted or rewarded for who you are. Mm-hmm. And I think this is so valuable to really, you know, find value in yourself, and to you know, to feel okay following your passions. So
What were some of those early experiences that you found that I think are really formative?
So something that really stands out in my own life is doing gymnastics. I did a lot of gymnastics starting at an early age, and discovering all the different ways that you could use your body and how to be upside down, to realize there was a place you could go that really went outside of the ordinary if you allowed yourself to be trained and to put some effort into it. So I think when we experience somebody doing an extraordinary thing, it's easy to feel like this is something you could never do. And that happens because if you were to just try to do it, you probably wouldn't be able to do it. But amazing stuff happens if you take an incremental learning approach to it. And it's, for something like gymnastics, you're learning to be very acrobatic, which is very different than what you might be exposed to in school, and the people you see walking down the street. And so to have the experience of doing something which really seems extraordinary, from maybe the first time you've encountered it, to realize that the extraordinary is really accessible, and there are all different kinds of extraordinary. But with continued instruction and practice and commitment, you can take yourself to extraordinary places.
Mm-hmm. What did you learn about practice, discipline, and habits from being a gymnast? And what role, if any, did coaches and teachers play in that experience for you?
I started in that sort of thing quite young. And so I think initially I probably wasn't very mindful of the role that the coaches were playing. In hindsight, just having a model that you could, in a very intuitive way, simply, mimic an attitude or a discipline, and rather than having to find the deep will and motivation to go solo, was really helpful. And so to have somewhere where you could show up on, a daily basis because, your parents signed you up and you got a chance to, and there was a routine of actually showing up there, then having people around, whose behavior was a good model to start to develop high performance routines. So I think, it's beautiful how a teacher can really help you in a non-intellectual way, simply by their presence, to develop a view and a practice, an attitude, a discipline, just because they are embodying it. And this is probably primarily how we learn. But as we grow older, we tend to become more and more intellectual about things. It could be because we end up being more and more independent, or just because of the way our life flows, we don't have the same access to teachers and coaches in our lives. So, if you were a performance athlete, as an adult, you'd continue to have that presence in your life. But I know, as I went on in my own life, pursued more academic things, it was more and more my own, it's the self-reliant component that was really necessary to, keep tension on the line and to critique myself. And, I think it's been interesting going through this process of developing Muse and really re-recognizing the importance of a teacher, of feedback, of accountability, and really seeing your own intention. That has made me think again about the possibility of, you know, teacher or coaches in my life. I know I just started music lessons on the Japanese flute. And one of the things that excited me most was the possibility of having a teacher again. And realizing that there was something that a teacher can offer that is so hard to find in another way.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that you had said is that doing gymnastics instilled the sense in you of the possibility of being able to do something extraordinary. And two questions come from that. One, how do you suggest parents instill that in their own kids? And two, as we lose that sense that something as extraordinary as possible as adults, what can we do to get it back?
I don't have children, so I have to relate to this through my own experience mostly. But I think this idea of for a parent to embody the quality themselves, to recognize the potency of that beyond trying to, you know, in a direct way, instruct. So it's interesting. It's easy to fall into the tendency of, you know, basically telling people what they should do. And this goes for the people in our lives that we're in relationship with, and it also goes for our kids. And it's easy to forget about what is transmitted just because of what you yourself are embodying and what you yourself are, how you're behaving and your attitude towards things. So I think, to try to develop the view that whatever it is that you are embodying is what's being taught, you know, rather than what you're saying with your words or you're telling people to do. So it's the low level, non-intellectual communication. And the challenge with that is it's very hard to see ourselves. Extraordinarily hard to see ourselves. And so it's very easy to, you know, to fall into, a pattern of seeing yourself in a certain way and have that start to become, you know, more and more disconnected from what's really happening, rather than converging towards a really deeper self-understanding. So I think, you know, one of the beauties of, you know, meditation practices and or working with a performance coach is the attention to what's really happening for you in a less imaginative way, you know. So can I get a clear view of what I'm putting out in the world and how I'm behaving and what my habits are and what my attitudes are, as opposed to the story I have for myself about, you know, who I am and, you know, what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. How do you begin to break those patterns? Like, what are the things, I mean, outside of meditation, obviously you have to start breaking patterns for things to change.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
As creators, we're always on the move. Whether it's a live podcast event, a pop-up shop, or a workshop, we're constantly interacting with community, and that's where Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe comes in. Imagine this. You're at a live event, a listener loves your merch, or a participant wants to sign up for your course on the spot. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, you can accept their payments right there and then, right from your iPhone, so there's no extra hardware or no delays. Total game changer. It's not just for creators. Any business owner can do this. It's about making transactions smoother and much more personal, growing your business in your way. We've been using Stripe for our products and courses for a long time, and now, with Tap to Pay on iPhone, you can take your business to the next level too. So visit stripe.com/tapiphone to learn more. Remember, folks, with Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, your business is always at your fingertips.
Yes. So I think there is new habit formation. And then there is, you know, specifically trying to break a pattern. So I really see it. You know, being human is really to be a complex set of patterns. And there's always some kind of pattern that's running. So when you're breaking a pattern, really what's happening, or one view of what's happening, is you have another pattern which is happening in its place. And so, you know, the cultivation of a preferred pattern is another way to look at breaking a pattern. And so we know there are ways that we can intentionally cultivate new patterns. But as for specifically breaking patterns, I think a more relevant question for myself is, how do we become aware of our patterns? Because it's with awareness that we actually have the ability to have some agency in choosing what things are serving us and what are not serving us. Mm-hmm. And so I think there are many different ways that we can become aware of our patterns. And the cultivation of a new pattern is also a means to become aware of our patterns. So cultivating routines that we set for ourselves is a really excellent way of finding out patterns that we didn't know we had, and also cultivating a pattern that, you know, we believe is going to be a greater service to ourselves, you know, what we're actually looking to achieve in our lives.
Hmm. So talk me through how you get from being a kid who does gymnastics to becoming the CEO of a meditation headset company. What has been the trajectory that's led you there? What have been the significant inflection points, and what planted the seeds for this idea in particular?
All right. I'll try to address most of that. I guess I've always been, let's say, I've always had the tendency to reimagine the world that I'm in, and to try to create things that are, you know, in alignment with how I'm feeling and what I'd like to see change around myself and how I live. And I think that interest just came from a natural ability to be able to create. And, you know, that ends up being a very rewarding experience, because you have an idea and you can, you know, turn it into something. I think just looking at, you know, from a very early age until where I am today, you know, there's a part that has never really changed, and that this is, you know, a creative energy to bring into being, you know, ideas that, you know, just come from my flow through life. And they usually manifest as physical things. I've always been a creator of physical things. And so, you know, technology, getting into technology, and to create with technology, you know, there was an immediate appeal for me, because suddenly, you know, my expressive power, my ability to create, expanded many fold as I understood technology and what I could do with it, especially computers. So, you know, when I was growing up, I kind of grew up with the emergence of the personal computer, And, you know, when I was very young, these, you know, sort of Commodore 64 land. There was also a simplicity to it. It was very much like it felt like a machine tool, you know, like you'd, you know, have a, you know, the tools that you might have in a workshop. You know, there was a greater complexity than those types of machines, but at the same time, there was also a real simplicity. And so I think, you know, that on its own was very rewarding as, you know, a young inventor to be able to understand something because of its simplicity and then start to see things that could be built from it. And so, you know, being able to understand and then to know how to build with it was incredible. And this is one reason why I'm so excited about what's happening with, you know, the maker world of Arduino and, you know, desktop 3D printers, because, you know, there was something for a young person to do with it. There was an easy place to get started and to start learning about how you can, you know, go from imagination to, you know, creation and manifestation. So that, I think, you know, you set the tone very early in life for me. And as I grew older, the kind of technology that I was interested in making, you know, became more and more about the struggle that I experienced in, you know, going through school and trying to perform, trying to figure out, you know, the core of my meaning, the meaning I created around my life, and how I could create things of value. I saw how I as an individual would struggle with certain things. One of them was definitely the onslaught of information that our world, it's just like standing in front of a fire hose. You know, there's just so much that we are exposed to. And I really felt it was like the difference between a person and a computer. You know, the computer processes information, and it's tireless at it. And a human being processes information too, but it's very tiring. And yet we have, there are so many other aspects to being human. And so I was just sort of like, wow, I wish I could have my tireless computer do this information stuff so I could focus more on the human stuff. A lot of the work that I did in university and in graduate school was really focused on how we could use, or how I could use, technology to help me cope with this very fast moving informatic world that I found myself living in. I ended up getting really into the creation of wearable computing devices. And so let's say the pop culture view of this would be like the product that Google made, where you could, you know, as a pair of glasses, and you'd have a computer generated reality that was overlaid upon, you know, your what was in front of you, augmented reality, we like to call that. So I became very interested in what cybernetic technology might hold for me personally as a way of having almost like a computer shield that would help with this information overload. So in some ways, the way I've seen this technology manifested, you know, hasn't really, you know, been in that spirit. In fact, it's a vehicle to get notifications. What I was really looking for was a vehicle to be more insulated from information overload. So anyway, it's like using technology as something to fight against the world of technology. Anyway, that didn't quite go as planned, but that's the sort of the attitude and the road I took was to try to use technology to help me work with information better. So I didn't find myself, you know, twisting up my, you know, primitive animal brain, too far in the sort of direction of becoming more computer-like myself as like just a raw information storehouse and processor. So that was, you know, early in my sort of, you know, academic life, this was what interested me. And part of that journey was looking at different ways of sensing what was happening inside my own physiology. So this was looking at my heart rate and different kinds of heart activity. It was looking at brain waves and how my state of cognition, consciousness would vary from moment to moment. And the interest that I had was creating a computing environment that was a little more sensitive to, you know, the limitations of being human. So a primary component of that is my attention. So if I was, you know, for instance, deep in flow in something, or I'm speaking to you in this one moment, and my watch is, you know, buzzing me because there was a meeting I was supposed to be in, you know, my attention immediately is drawn to this other thing, which is, you know, trying to grab at my awareness, yet I'm trying to keep my flow speaking with you. And I really wanted technology to be more sensitive to what was happening for me. You know, if these are human beings that are with us, you know, it's very easy to see, or perhaps should be easy to see how a person is feeling and what's happening for them in this moment. And you know that maybe now's not a good time to interrupt, and I should just wait 10 minutes. We can be sensitive to each other and what's happening for us because, you know, we can sense and we can feel and understand what that experience is like. Whereas computers, you know, whether it be our cell phones, watches, or, you know, whatever, they still aren't yet at that point where they have a sensitivity to, you know, how am I doing and what's useful and appropriate right now. You know, the best we sort of have is, well, we can mute our notifications at certain times or during meetings. But there isn't this deep kind of awareness of, okay, you know, what's flowing for you? Is this a good time? Should I defer? How important is this interruption? You know, these are things that as a human being, you can make a judgment about. So that was kind of the interest, was having a technology that was more sensitive to, you know, how I was feeling and what I was doing in that one moment, so it could respond and behave in a more human-centric way. So that was, you know, one dimension. The other dimension that I was looking at, you know, these sensors and technology for is, you know, maybe there are abilities that are available to us as human beings that we could develop, either to have within us or to have in partnership with technology. So the essence of cybernetic technology is a sort of symbiotic relationship between, you know, yourself and technology, where the combined organism has a greater capability in one way or another. And we're already living like this. You know, we are cyborgs with our phones and computers and our cars. You know, working on a wearable computing device where it would augment what you see, the closest analogy you could make would be the sort of Geordi LaForge experience in Star Trek. You know, what world could this man perceive because his vision was augmented by technology and you could see into the far reaches of the electromagnetic spectrum? How would my appreciation of nature and the world around me change if I could sense more? So I was very interested in extended perception and what that might mean for things that I was able to do, my ability to grow. And then the other part was to try to cope with this onslaught of information in our world. And that all came together ultimately with Muse and what I'm working on now with the team here. I didn't, you know, one day have a vision. Like many things, it's often our best discoveries kind of happen by accident. And The accident that happened was someone introduced me to meditation. And I had never heard of meditation. I mean, I've heard the word, and I thought meditation, you know, meant, sitting down and just chilling out, relaxing. It didn't even for me have a spiritual connotation. It was just about chilling out or deep thinking. And so, and this was actually while we were working on the first generation of Muse, and we were looking for the right place to start with a technology like this so that people become interested and find the values that we found in it. And someone plants a seed in a fertile ground that was just so ready to receive it because, little did you know, but you had actually prepared the environment perfectly for it. And so our experience with building the first Muse and using this technology in different ways, exploring, one of the realizations was, simply exploring your own inner world and learning more about yourself was incredible. And it kept us interested continuously for years. We were interested in continuing to try to build new things, look inside yourself, have insights, create experiences, play with your ability to modulate your brain state and your physiological state. And that deep awareness and agency is, exactly in what meditation is all about. And I just had no idea. And so when someone encouraged me to take a deeper look at meditation, it was this experience of, instant recognition, but also like some frustration, because I was just like, I can't believe no one told me about this, because this is exactly what I've essentially committed my life to for as long as I can remember, was deepening awareness and improving skills to really allow yourself to be more capable and more free in every moment, which was, what I was seeking from the get-go and my whole sort of technological exploration. So it was an accident because, it took somebody to come forward and say, hey, you should take a look at this thing. And then kind of all the pieces fell into place.
Wow. So, earlier you said that there's been this sort of creative energy and this desire to go from imagination to invention that has sustained throughout your life. Why do you think it's sustained throughout your life, and why doesn't it for other people?
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
As creators, we're always on the move. Whether it's a live podcast event, a pop-up shop, or a workshop, we're constantly interacting with community, and that's where Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe comes in. Imagine this. You're at a live event, a listener loves your merch, or a participant wants to sign up for your course on the spot. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, you can accept their payments right there and then, right from your iPhone, so there's no extra hardware or no delays. Total game changer. It's not just for creators. Any business owner can do this. It's about making transactions smoother and much more personal, growing your business in your way. We've been using Stripe for our products and courses for a long time, and now, with Tap to Pay on iPhone, you can take your business to the next level too. So visit stripe.com/tapiphone to learn more. Remember, folks, with Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, your business is always at your fingertips.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can definitely speak to the times in myself when it seems to, let's say the energy for it comes and goes. And I would say a big reason why it goes is because of fear. It's essentially the comfort of knowing what's going on, or thinking you know what's going on, and how how you should be conducting yourself to be successful starts to become an idea that is a self-fulfilling prophecy. So let me try to come back to that and make it a little more clear. When you are engaged in a creative endeavor, you really have to let go of what you think you know and open yourself to the mystery of being. You have to open yourself to ideas that didn't come from your imagination. You have to let the world in. That process of letting go of how you understand things to allow a new idea to come in is scary. To create things, a lot of failure always comes with it. So you have an idea and you try to bring it into action, and you know it's really through continued effort that you are able to turn it into what its potential is. But you know the process of getting there is one which is fraught with all kinds of failure. So there's the challenge of opening yourself up to what else is out there. And to do so, you need to step beyond the way you see things so you can let something new in, which is a totally scary process. And then you have to then continue to work in this place where you're uncomfortable in order to be able to ultimately create something new and go through that process of iteration and refinement and discovery until it is actually something. I mean, when you first step out into the unknown, you're an infant, and you're really out of your element. You know, you have whatever skills you've cultivated to work with that environment, but you're in a new world. So there's always a stepping out into the unknown. You know, I see this in the microcosm of Muse. As we work with a team to build new things, we are doing things that no one has ever done before. And to do so really is asking everyone to step out of their comfort zone and to try to see things with fresh new eyes so that we can, you know, actually be able to, receive what we need to actually know what to do, as opposed to, you know, just doing what you know in a new place and having it fail because you're not listening.
Wow. So many questions come from this. one, what are the things that you've seen, outcomes and benefits you've seen in people's lives as a byproduct of using Muse? And what have been the ones that have been unexpected? I think that we all kind of know the expected benefits of meditation, right? Better attention, you know, calmer mind. But what are the things that have surprised you in terms of the outcomes that people have had in their lives from using your product?
Well, I think the thing that continues to surprise me, and this seems to happen over and over again, is there are people who would never even consider doing meditation. In fact, are super resistant to it. Who discover it through Muse and find themselves, you know, let's say, they find themselves in a totally new place and perspective. So we've seen a lot of people who, you know, go from saying, "I would never meditate," to someone who not only finds himself with a regular meditation practice, but also starting to explore totally new domains that were also super no-fly zones for them. You know, whether it be starting a yoga practice or starting to journal or, joining groups and becoming social in a way they'd never done before. So there's so many interesting things that can come from us just, you know, this slight shift in perspective and a little bit more self-understanding. And it's really hard to see where that blossoms into. But I think that the step for me, which I'm always super surprised at, is to find people who are really felt that meditation was ridiculous and wasn't for them to meditating every day. I never expected that to happen. I always imagined that the people who would pick up Muse were people who would have an interest in meditation, but didn't know how to get started, or were, a little bit frustrated because they've tried meditation and didn't know they were doing it right because they had no feedback from a teacher to know what they should be doing. So that's the road that I imagined. I didn't imagine there would be people who would try Muse because, you know, a friend said, "Hey, you should just check out this thing. You know, it's pretty cool." And I guess because it's a gadget and technology and interesting, they decided just to give it a go and then found themselves, you know, with a meditation practice and with a totally, redefined view of it and their lives. So that was unexpected for me, was that.
Yeah. So I know that, obviously because you guys sponsored an episode, and we'll mention the discount that you guys are providing in the show notes, and I'll mention it again at the top of the show. But one of the things I wonder is, I know you said that you guys have had athletes and executives. What have you seen as far as enhancements in performance in other parts of people's lives as a result of this?
I'm trying to think of examples that really aren't just sort of rehashing the sort of known benefits of meditation.
Right.
One thing that I found pretty interesting was that in some of the science we've been involved in recently, looking at the use of Muse, in a multi-week program, is that people's reaction times would increase. And this would obviously have benefit for someone who is an athlete, where reaction time was of importance. But I think that's pretty significant to think the application that might have in people's lives is to, you know, first of all, know that there is something pretty fundamental that's changing neurologically, and that, you know, something as basic as reaction time, which is, you know, probably one of these things which you might think is a fixed quantity for yourself and your age, but rather something which is trainable and malleable is pretty incredible possibility. So I think, you know, that's something that is super cool. I think this shift to generally having more openness to what things might be beneficial to try and practice. Like maybe it'd be great to find a personal coach or, to have a different view of relationship. Certainly we get a lot of reports from our users who've noticed radical improvements to their relations with other people, with people who are important in their lives because of a little bit more self-awareness, but also, you know, and again, this is something which comes with meditation training, but this ability to respond rather than react to things. So as you develop your attention, when you are emotionally triggered, it's a lot more plausible that you don't react in that moment, but rather, you know, make a skillful choice of, well, what is the right way to respond in this situation? What do I really want? And what do I not want to reinforce? So, you know, to have an experience where you typically jump to, you know, an angry outburst, recognizing that you have a choice of not doing that, and also seeing how that outburst, you know, can be part of a reinforcing pattern, you know, a cycle of activity between people in relationship that, you know, perhaps doesn't go where you want it to go. So I would say improvements to relationships probably across the board is one of the most powerful, things. And that can have totally life-changing consequences, whether it be just your performance at the office, doing what you need to do for work, or, you know, in your home life, which, the people in our lives are so important.
So, I knew earlier you alluded to this idea of sort of cybernetic and becoming these sort of, you know, cyborg type human beings that we're already doing this with most of our devices. And what I'm curious about is what else is possible? Like, what's a glimpse into the future of what we're going to be able to do with this technology? I think to me, meditation seems just like the entry point. It seems like there's a lot more that's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, it's really hard to know. Definitely we're being able to get in to the mind and our physiology at a level which could have profound implications on how we learn and how we heal and how we grow. So, you know, there's brain stimulation techniques where, you know, people find an enhanced ability to learn something. And it's, you know, it's some of these things are quite remarkable, and the difference in performance. We know that we can influence ourselves in a low level and radically change how we feel. So it's certainly what's coming is going to have tremendous power. The thing that let's say is always top of mind for myself is how do we imagine we're going to use these things that we create? And I actually think we have a long journey to, let's say, understand a human being to the depth that technology can be, you know, capable on its own to, you know, take us to a place of wellness. We all have, there's something deep inside of us which, you know, sort of drives our path, you know, through our lives. You know, this is the deep identity, inspiration, values, and ultimately our life satisfaction comes when we can know and honor those things at a very deep level. So, you know, simply it's like I could become physically fit, but because I know how to train the human body. But ultimately, the thing that's going to lead us to a long, happy life and fulfilled life is being able to tap into our deepest truth for ourselves and identity and allow that to be expressed forth in how we train ourselves and live our lives and what we do. So I think that deepest level of who we are is not something that, you know, technology I see very quickly being able to put its finger on. And it's like the deep essence of what it is to be you as a human being. And so you'd hope that as we have more powerful technology that, you know, we would be able to leverage it to serve that deeper truth for us. But actually to know that deeper truth is a real puzzle. It's really not easy. In fact, you know, most of the time we are living from a story, you know, and who knows when that story appeared for us. But we're living to a story and we're also trying to not feel discomfort or fearful. So a lot of our behaviors are just to keep ourselves feeling good, and they aren't necessarily in accordance with our deep sense of, you know, who we are and what we care about. You know, often, you know, driving that course of a deeper self-truth is one that actually has a lot of discomfort as well as joy along with it. We do challenging things, and we have to go through, you know, that spectrum of experiences in order to get where we need to go. So, you know, no pain, no gain from a certain perspective. So, you know, if all we're trying to do is feel good, and we have more and more powerful technology to help us feel good, you know, is it plausible that we will allow ourselves to know ultimately where we want to go and to go through whatever discomfort's necessary to get there? You know, or will we get lost in this, you know, cycle of pleasure seeking? So I think that, you know, what humans have discovered, you know, with meditation is very interesting, because it really starts to address some of that deep issue of, you know, really knowing who you are and not letting your fears drive your, you know, moment to moment behaviors. And I really think to discover and be who we truly are, you need to be able to, you know, be with your fear, and you need to have the tools to do that. So I think humanity has discovered something totally amazing with, you know, with meditation techniques and the sort of associated, you know, psychological understanding. And it's been successful enough that it's stuck around for an awfully long time. I guess what I would like to see is I'd like to see technology, you know, continuing to, you know, honor that knowledge and then to take it the next step. I mean, there's got to be a next step. I think, yeah, it's going to be really interesting what the future holds in these things. But I have some fear about it, because I know, you know, every time we create something that is more powerful in its ability to make ourselves feel, our tendency is to use it in a pleasure seeking way, and to use it in the other way actually takes some really deep understanding and skill of the human organism and how we function. So, you know, I was very excited when I first stepped into, you know, Oculus, you know, Rift, or, you know, I have a couple of vibes here in the office where I explore the possibilities of using VR in a you know, mental training, you know, therapeutic way. But just getting into that experience was just like, we are in another world. We're heading for another world where the experiences that we can provide for people, you know, it's the next level of, you know, potency. You know, we have the big screen cinema experience, but, you know, through VR, you have like a super immersive, like part of your brain just thinks this is real life kind of thing, you know, Ready Player One. But at the same time, you know, you can get lost in that. And if the idea there is to, you know, what's the motivation behind the technology? What are you trying to provide an escape? Are you, are you trying to provide pleasure, entertainment? Or is there an aspect to it, which is really, can it be helpful to bring you to a deeper level of capability within yourself and also self-understanding to know what it is that you want and to be able to, skillfully navigate to that, ultimately ending in a, with living in a way where you can be very satisfied with how you've used your time here on Earth.
Wow. Well, I have one last question for you, which is how we finish all of our interviews, the Unmistakable Creative. What do you think it is that makes somebody or something unmistakable?
Well, I've always found that I've always found uniqueness to be something which is unmistakable. It's when I have an experience or experience something which teaches me something. In my experience, these are either things which are totally novel to myself, and this could be, an experience in nature where I've, gone somewhere totally new and have experienced an environment that I've never experienced before. But in terms of the human realm, and with people and what they do, and the things that they create, I really find things that really that are not a rehash of things that are already here, but rather something which, comes from a totally different place. But it also is comprehensible is a thing that has the most power. And that for me is a creative expression that is truly resonant with the creator. And so it's, let's say, self-expression in the most authentic sense. So it's when you watch a great musician perform, it's, the person that has no ego, self-conscience, and they are just, they are just the music. That when I witness that, it changes something in me, like at a cellular level. It speaks to me in the deepest possible way. And the same thing goes for the things that people create. I think all of our creations are artistic creations. It's unmistakable when things are created from this very authentic place with a lot of love. Authentic, creative expression that comes from a place of love.
Well, I think that makes a really fitting end to our conversation. Where can people find out more about you and everything that you're up to?
The best way is just to come to Choose Muse. This is our creation and our expression, and the best way to know us is through what we create.
Awesome. And for everybody listening, we'll wrap the show with that.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The Four Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The Four Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, K-E-Y-S. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys, and download your free copy.